Russia's invasion of Ukraine is in its second week. Some expected a quick victory. Are Moscow's objectives being met? And how far is the West prepared to go in supporting Ukraine militarily? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fully Batibo. It's been nearly 2 weeks since Russia's president launched the invasion of Ukraine. Vladimir Putin vowed to demilitarize and denazify the country and protect civilians, he says, have been subjected to abuse by Ukraine's government in Kyiv. Now, here's what's happened so far. The U.S.-based Institute for the Study of War says Russian forces have taken these areas in red. They control the city of Kherson in the south. Mariupol and Ukraine's second city, Kharkiv, have been shelled heavily. Russian soldiers are trying to encircle the capital, Kyiv, but Ukrainian forces have slowed their advance for now. Russian units are reported to be suffering from poor logistics and low morale, and they've faced strong resistance from Ukrainian soldiers. Al Jazeera's Charles Stratford reports from Kharkiv, a city now in ruins.
A man walks carefully down a street, totally destroyed. Russian bombs have ripped through these buildings in central Kharkiv. The area is silent and brutally scarred. Shrapnel has ripped through cars. Masonry thrown in the blasts has crushed others. Flames still rise from buildings nearby. Bomb craters and twisted steel.
This street in central Kharkiv shows you just how devastating the effect of Russian bombing of this city has been. An entire street totally destroyed. Many of these buildings have people's homes in them. Private residences, flats, some of them still smoking. One of the main things that many people here tell you is that they can in no way understand how the leader of a country like Russia could do something like this to a city like Kharkiv.
Tessa is in shock. She walks around in a daze looking at the destroyed businesses and homes.
I cannot think straight. I can't find the words. It's barbaric, terrible. The world is shaking. I just don't understand.
Shrapnel has ripped through the golden spires of an Orthodox church. Every window is smashed. Underground metro stations is where many people hide. Young and old stand patiently in line for food served by volunteers. A bowl of soup, salad, and bread. Ilona and her 12-year-old daughter, Nastya, show us the train carriage where they've sheltered since their home was destroyed.
It started 12 days ago. Our house was destroyed. We don't know where to live anymore. I don't know where to go with my child. Honestly, help us. There are many here like us who have lost everything.
Their belongings are neatly arranged where they sleep. There are family pets here too.
I thought we would live peacefully in happiness, united, but I was wrong.
In another carriage, we find 19-year-old Violetta and her baby son, Bogdan. He was born in hospital 2 days after the Russian army invaded.
It's so difficult. Every day we wash him upstairs. I'm so worried about him getting cold.
Vladimir Putin told the world repeatedly Russia would never invade Ukraine. Kharkiv is a terrified testimony to his lie. Charles Stratford, Al Jazeera, Kharkiv.
Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin insists the operation is going to plan and says he won't call up conscripts or reserve troops.
I'd like to highlight that in the military action, no conscripted soldiers will be taking part. And we will not call for reserves. Only professional military personnel will take part in these actions. And we will secure peace for all the people of Russia.
And Russia has tightened reporting on the conflict. Parliament passed a law threatening up to 15 years jail for anyone caught spreading what the government calls false information. Facebook is blocked. TikTok and Netflix have suspended most of their services. Well, let's bring in our guests now for today's show. In Moscow, Pavel Felgenhauer, who's a defense and military analyst. From Oxford in the UK, Samuel Romani, associate fellow at the Royal United Services Institute for Defense and Security Studies. And from Toulouse, France, Baptiste Robert, Chief Executive Officer of Predictor Lab, an organization focusing on fighting disinformation. Gentlemen, thank you all for being with us today on Inside Story. Pavel, in Moscow, let me start with you. Some Russian analysts had said President Putin had ordered a victory by March the 2nd. We're now mid-March and Kyiv is still standing. Is the conflict going the way Russia wants? Are Russia's war goals on track?
Well, obviously not. And not only in Russia there are such predictions. The Pentagon was saying that Ukrainian organized resistance will most likely collapse in 72 hours. That means in 3 days. And then, of course, there could be guerrilla warfare, but the organized chain of command of Ukrainian military will collapse. Well, it didn't. The Ukrainians are still very much fighting organized force. Their staffs are working. Their chain of command is intact. Mm-hmm. And actually, right now, I would say we are at the crescent of this conflict because right now, the Russian advance has run out of steam, obviously.
Why is that? Why has the Russian military run out of steam, you think? What have been the hurdles and challenges for this military?
Well, you know, I could write a big article about that because there's so many things that went wrong and so many things that were done wrongly by the Russian military and political leadership. I mean, you can't answer it in a soundbite. But the bottom line is that they right now are began advancing in directions, spreading out in different directions. They're not helping each other, the different parts of the Russian operation, much. While the Ukrainians can use operative lines from inside to bring swing forces from the north to south to hit Russian military groupings, one by one. So this is, a textbook for military planning mistake, a very grave mistake.
Samuel Romani.
And also, Russia has right now a very, very big standing army, a regular army of at least 170 permanent battle-ready battalion tactical groups, which is a lot, but doesn't have reserves.
Right. But Pavel, President Putin has said he won't call up reservists, but there have been reports that they've already been involved in this conflict. What more can you tell us about this?
Not really. There is a small number of new style reservists that are paid money and are kind of could be used already. They're part of some units, but there are not many of them, maybe 15,000, no more. Mm-hmm. The rest are reservists that are reservists only on paper. They served once. 1 year of compulsory service, and then were never called up for retraining. You have to call them up if you want to call them up, and then give them at least 4 months, maybe six, retraining before they can be gone into battle. At least three, okay. They can't be used immediately.
So reservists with no military experience. Let me just bring Samuel Romani into the conversation. I'll come back to you in a second, Pavel, for more on the Russian strategy. Samuel Romani, what is your assessment of how the war is going? Is Putin's military objective? Is it being met as he claims? Are they on track?
Well, I think the war is definitely following, lagging well behind where Russia would want to be at this point, because Russia was planning on a low-cost, high-impact operation that would lead to a quick seizure of Kiev. Ideally, it wanted to cut Kiev off from the rest of Ukraine through the use of siege tactics and through the use of a mixture of missiles, artillery, bombings. And also, its other objective was to landlock Ukraine. Mm. It's achieved some of that objective by getting control over the city of Kherson, but the Mariupol corridor that links Crimea to the rest of Ukraine still remains an area of open conflict. The situation in northern and northeastern Ukraine also remains militarily stagnant over the past 72 hours, if the latest U.S. intelligence reports are to be believed. Mm-hmm. And that 60-mile convoy that's on its way to Kiev remains an open target that's basically just stuck in inertia right now.
How do you think the Ukrainian military has been able to resist until now?
Well, the Ukrainian military has surprised many, in part because of the resilience of the Ukrainian Air Force. That's been something that many people have been surprised by. The United States has says that the significant majority of Ukrainian Air Force planes remain intact. The Russians have argued that most of the core Ukrainian air capabilities have been destroyed. But regardless, we've seen it remain a resilient force. Mm. Ukraine has also used effective weaponry that it's received from other countries. In particular, it's been effective in using Bayraktar TB2 drones from Turkey, but has also been making good use of Stinger anti-tank missiles and other anti-air and anti-artillery systems that they've received from Western countries over the past 4 weeks.
Right. Okay, let me come to you now, Baptiste Robert. Some estimates by American officials claim that Ukrainian soldiers have killed some 3,000 Russian troops. Is this credible? Because there's a war going on, of course, but there's also an information war.
It's always complicated to take the official numbers as credible. What we can say in what we can see on social networks and what we can really verify is that there is a huge number of dead soldiers in both sides, for sure. And this is not, as you said before, this is not the war Russia wanted to have. This is not happening as planned. And this is the same thing on the information side for mm-hmm. the information warfare we are currently seeing. This is not something well planned by Russia. And so right. This is why they do have
Who's
some
winning,
issues.
Who's winning, would you say, the information war, side? Baptiste, right now? Who's winning the information war? Because there's also been a lot of propaganda from the Ukrainian side. Are the Ukrainians winning the information war?
Yes, for sure. In this first phase of the war, the Ukrainian side is clearly winning it because, they do prepare some very good stories. President Zelensky is pretty good at communication. He created his own persona. He's right now like a hero in Ukraine. And for sure, they're winning the first phase because Russia was not planned to have something on the long term, for sure. And this is why on social networks at the moment, you can see a huge amount of videos of pro-Ukraine videos. Mm-hmm. You don't have so much propaganda, so mm-hmm. much pro-Russia content at the moment.
I'll ask Pavel in a minute about how the war... I apologize for interrupting you, Baptiste, but I'll ask Pavel in a minute how the war is being viewed in Russia, within Russia. But first, I want us to compare the invasion of Ukraine with Russia's previous military engagements. In 1999, Russia invaded Chechnya for the second time in 5 years. Its stated aim was to quash Chechenian armed forces trying to establish an Islamic state in Russia's Dagestan. Chechnya's capital, Grozny, was leveled in the fighting. In 2008, Russia fought a 12-day war with Georgia. Moscow occupied the breakaway regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Thousands of Russian soldiers are still there. 6 years later, Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula within a month and began supporting separatists in the east. And Russia's involvement in Syria's war from 2015 helped turn the conflict in President Bashar al-Assad's favor. Pavel, let me come to you now. When you look at the invasion of Ukraine and compare it to Grozny, for example, what do you think has hindered this Russian operation in particular? Was it a lack of preparedness or a lack of equipment or morale being low among Russian troops, as some have claimed?
Well, it's always in war, it's always a complicated picture, and it's a bit of all of that. But, I mean, the main strategic military mistake was that in Chechnya, it was concentrated offensive from the north, from the east, and from the west. Russian groupings were converging on Grozny, and uniting forces in the end to take the main point of enemy resistance. In Ukraine, they're moving in different directions. They're not converging with each other. It's, I don't know, as if they're trying to, I don't know, corral cattle or something. They didn't apparently believe that Ukraine would resist at all. It's hard to comprehend how such an operation was produced in the Russian general staff. But it was, and now we're stuck with it. And the Russian PR machine is working very good inside Russia for the time being. But it will begin to falter because the fact that Russians advance has grind to a stop is obvious. We ran out of reserves because we can't send troops from other parts of Russia anymore, because we're still preparing if there will be an escalation into all European or global war. While Ukrainians are getting lots of reserves, they're mobilizing a total mobilization. So Ukraine is getting stronger on the battlefield, and they're getting money to fight this, to get this effort, and they're getting lots of arms from the West. Okay. So Ukraine right now in the battlefields of on the Ukrainian battlefields is getting stronger, and Russia is getting weaker. And that's the real serious problem there.
What do most Russians believe?
The crescent of this war.
What do most Russians, Pavel, believe about what's happening across the border, the narrative that the Kremlin is putting out?
The narrative, the majority apparently is taking it, there's a rallying around the flag thing happening right now. Of course, there are those who protest. And protest, though they're being arrested, but that's maybe up to 30% of the population. Maybe 30% fully support actively this campaign. The others are rather indifferent. But this may change very quickly as Western sanctions tank the Russian economy. In the coming months to half a year, the economy may so tank that there's going to be internal political repercussions. Putin and his Kremlin are right now in a pickle.
Samuel Romani in Oxford, comparing this to previous Russian engagements, whether in Grozny or even Syria, would you say the Russian military has underperformed during this invasion, as some Western military analysts have said?
Well, I think it certainly has underperformed in this invasion. So that's definitely an area where one would be concerned. It's not just an underperformance in terms of Russia's ability to exercise conventional capabilities. During the 2008 Georgian War, there were a lot of problems with supply chain shortages. There were issues connecting logistical and food and other equipment to between different Russian troops in different parts of the conflict. Sergei Shoigu, as defense minister, and Vladimir Putin vowed after that conflict to modernize the military and transform it. And what it appears as if Russia's gotten is that they've gotten a lot more sophisticated technology in their military, whether it be higher-grade hypersonic weapons, whether it be higher-grade missile systems, higher-grade air defense systems. But they haven't figured out the core logistical difficulties that undermine them inside the Georgian conflict. Also, it's important to keep in mind that Russia has been used to operations where they have local proxies and surrogates, like in Donetsk and Luhansk in 2014 and 2015, the pro-Russian separatist militias, or using air support with ground backing, like they've done in Syria. They're not used to a large terrestrial offensive of this kind, and their inexperience is starting to show. And finally, the war has been a failure also from the front of other non-military means of offensive operations, like cybersecurity. It appears as if Russia has been unable to debilitate the Ukrainian communications infrastructure through cyber attacks, and they're now having to resort to bombing them, whereas Russia has been targeted by cyber attacks on numerous occasions. So it's been all around, I think, a military failure.
All around a military failure, you say. Baptiste in Toulouse, Russia also used brutal tactics to level Grozny, for example, or even in Aleppo in Syria during the civil war. But this invasion in Ukraine and, you know, the leveling of Kharkiv that we saw in Charles' reports earlier, it seems to have resonated more with people in the West, in Europe in particular. Why do you think that is?
This war is a little bit different from the others, because what we have to say is that at the moment, the internet is still up on the large part of Ukraine. And so a large number of people do have a cell phone and film everything they can do. And all these videos are available almost in live on Telegram, on social networks. And this is the first one we can see, which is almost live stream, live tweeted on social networks. And all these videos are analyzed, fact-checked, and you have a large community of OSINT analysts, people who are doing open source intelligence, which are analyzing this video and are able to verify everything almost in live. And so This is super complicated to lie. This is super complicated to push some propaganda, some disinformation. So we are seeing some attempt from Russia to push, to create a trend around this special operation. We can see some operation from Russia on some very specific case. For example, you can see video mislabeled, some false description, some stuff like this. But as you said, the main part of what you can see on the internet at the moment
is coming.
Ukraine, and there is no a big effort from Russia to counter that.
Okay, let me come to Pavel, because we're almost running out of time. Pavel, President Putin has threatened, invoking Russia's nuclear arsenal as a warning to the United States and the West and its allies to stay out of this war. How do you see this conflict evolving now? We're now in its second week. Where do things go from here?
I believe the most probable way is going to be a war of attrition in Ukraine, and that's, again, not good at all, because that will mean that the West supplies of war materials and humanitarian supplies would be going over the border from Poland, Slovakia, and Romania, and Hungary, and that Russia would be saying that the war is continuing because of those supplies, as it happened in many other wars in Algiers and Vietnam, and may begin attacking the columns on the border, or maybe even attacking over the border, and that's already NATO territory. Mm. So there's a possibility, with the war dragging on, that there's possibility of escalation happening there, and that's the biggest danger, and that escalation could lead in the end to a possible nuclear use.
Samuel Romani in Oxford, sanctions alone haven't been enough so far, at least to make President Putin pause this invasion. Can Ukraine hold out on its own? What should Western countries, what can they do to support Ukraine? They've ruled out a no-fly zone, of course, but what other options are out there to give Ukraine a fighting chance?
Well, I think that the Western countries should really take action on some of their military assistance pledges that we've been talking about. The European Union pledged 450 million euros in terms of military assistance, and that included the deployment of fighter jets. So the deal that Poland is currently negotiating with the United States with regards to MiG-29 transfers, with the U.S. filling in the Polish Air Force, is a great step forward, as would be similar deals coming from Bulgaria and Slovakia. That would allow the Ukrainian Air Force to target stationary Russian targets like the convoy that's on its way to Kiev. So that's an important thing. Also, more deployments of anti-air and anti-missile defense systems, particularly if Russia starts emulating its tactics in Aleppo, in Kiev, would also be very helpful. And more of support for cyber infrastructure, I think, would also be useful, too. Like, Ukraine's membership as an observer now in the Cyber NATO Deterrence Unit is a positive step, and I think they should be more integrated there, too.
Okay. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for a very interesting discussion. Pavel Felgenhauer, Samuel Romani, and Baptiste Robert. And thank you as well for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. You can, of course, also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJ Inside Story. From me, Fully Batibo, and the whole team, thanks for watching. Bye for now.